Welcome back to the Roundtable. Chris Kaliza is the managing editor of the Washington Post political section and the author of The Fix, a leading blog on politics covering the White House, Congress, campaigns, polls, and more. He's also an MSNBC contributor and political analyst and appears regularly on the network in addition to NBC, PBS, and NPR's Diane Rehm Show, among others. In 2011, he won an Emmy for his work on The Fast Fix, honored as Best Political Video Series. He joined The Washington Post in 2005. His new book is The Gospel According to The Fix, an insider's guide to a less than holy world of politics. It's being called an essential guide to the wonderfully odd world of politics. Chris, thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for having me. Thanks for that great introduction. Jeez.
Well, am I pronouncing your last name correctly?
It's Kaliza, but don't worry.
Oh, Kaliza.
When you have a last name like mine, you get used to it.
Chris Kaliza. Well, Chris, good morning. I thank you very much for being with us. What brought you to put this guide together, and ultimately, how did your work in this fashion come to be?
Well, I started writing a blog in 2005 for the Washington Post. And, you know, when you write a blog, you write a lot, but you don't necessarily get to spend as much time on some subjects as you'd like. So there was, as I was going, and in 6 years I had a long list of things that I wanted to, I don't know, maybe delve a little bit more deeply into, people I wanted to talk more about, themes I wanted to explore more, you know, just do what I do, but do it a little bit longer and a little bit more in depth. So that was where the idea for the book grew. You know, and I also, the other broad thing, and this is what I try to do with the blog every day, is show people that politics isn't as complex, isn't as kind of hard to relate to as you might think, that these are just people doing a job, trying to do it the best that they can. They make mistakes sometimes, they do great sometimes, just like the rest of us. And maybe for people who are already really into politics, this book, I hope, will continue to feed their obsession. But as importantly, I would say, for people who maybe have kind of a passing interest but not really sure where they come down on it, I would hope that this book is kind of a primer for them that kind of explains some questions they have, answers some questions they have, and, you know, just serves as overall an entry point into kind of the world of politics that I very much love.
It is, you know, we just came out of this, our question of the day having to do with Syria. And while I certainly understand your point that these are just people trying to do the best job that they can, there's no doubt about it that this particular issue, as many others are, is incredibly complex. And it's also while a foreign affairs issue, it is also a political issue. So how do we try to make sense, and I'm just using that as an example,
sure.
You don't have to go specifically into Syria, but, you know, how do we then make sense of these terrifically complex political issues, not just our politics, but the politics of the rest of the world as well?
You know, I think it's a great question. I would say, unfortunately, for the next 92 days, which is the number of days between today and November 6th when we all vote, the conversation is likely to get simpler and less engaged than more complex and more engaging on these issues. You know, I think we've already seen a kind of lowest common denominator politics take over. That is the nature of, as we get closer and closer to elections, these things become painted in very broad strokes when issues like Syria, or even, you know, closer to home, the economy or healthcare or education or the environment, if there were simple solutions to any of these things, we would have already found them. You know, and that's what I always say. Politicians are not purposely not finding solutions. These solutions are just complicated, and unfortunately, our politics often rewards the simple rather than the complicated. You know, I have a whole section in the book about 10 issues that we're not talking about. Two of them, 6 and 7, on my list of 10, are foreign policy. They are just kind of forgotten issues, even at a time when we have, as you point out, this chaos in Syria, Bashar al-Assad continuing to try to hang on, and what should the U.S.'s role there be? We have Iraq and Afghanistan. We have the Middle East, obviously. Mitt Romney was over in that part of the world last week. It is it is a complex, both domestic and global world that the next president, whether that's Barack Obama in a second term or Mitt Romney in a first, will inherit. And yet the campaign that is being run on both sides is in many ways kind of a race to the bottom, or at least a race to the kind of simplest explanations for solutions or problems that are more complex than that.
And the list you speak of is of issues that are not being discussed, basically, you would argue, because of the economy.
I would say because of the economy, yes, because when the economy is bad, we know in our politics it drowns out everything else. But I would add they're not being discussed because there are no simple solutions. The American public, in a way, we want our cake and want to eat it too. You know, we want everything all at once. We want everyone to be. We don't want our taxes to go up, but we want the economy to do better. We want small business to succeed, but we don't. There's questions about regulation. You know, we haven't, I think, made up our mind that we are now in a time of hard choices. Obviously, we have the fiscal cliff approaching at the end of the year. No matter who the president of the United States is, that will be a huge challenge for Congress and for the White House. This is a time in which we are going to have to make some either-or decisions, not both-and decisions. And I wonder if our political system is ready, and if we, the people, are ready to make those hard decisions.
Top issue on the list is immigration.
I put it in there because I think it is so fundamental to figure out. It was a huge topic of debate during the, you know, hundreds of Republican presidential primary debates that I covered this year. I think there were probably about 25, but it felt like more. It was an issue that was really, again, discussed really on the surface, which was Mitt Romney doing everything he could to portray himself as conservative on the issue, saying, you know, we don't need amnesty, we need people obeying the laws. And actually Rick Perry and Newt Gingrich as voices of moderation saying, well, we're not just going to ship the 12 million or so people back. The issue here is that it's a very hot-button issue. If you think back in 2008, John McCain almost lost his presidential bid based on his willingness to try and come up with comprehensive immigration reform. So politically, it's hard to touch, but from a policy perspective, at some point, we are going to have to address this. What do we do about these people? What is the best path forward? Is there a best path forward? I don't think anyone thinks Romney's proposal, which he out said, you know, that these people self-deport, I don't think people think that's a solution. I would say at the same time, you know, Barack Obama has pushed at times DREAM Act. He's done a few other things, but he has not made this a front and center issue for him either. So the question is there the political will to get something done on this issue? Clearly from a policy perspective, our current policy is not working.
Finally, in the moment or two that we have left, you at the end of the book, you write about Kirsten Gillibrand and ask the question, the next Hillary. And, of course, we have great interest in Kirsten Gillibrand as our former congresswoman and now our senator here, junior senator in New York State. What fascinates you about her?
Well, I would say look at the 2016 Democratic field. The thing that you don't find, if you believe Hillary Clinton isn't running, if you believe Hillary Clinton is running, you should ignore everything that I say next. But if you think she's not running, what the field lacks is a female Democratic politician with a proven capacity to raise money. In a Democratic primary, being a woman is a hugely important factor. And I would say that a woman will run for president, I believe, in 2016 on the Democratic side. Gillibrand doesn't get that much attention outside of the New York area, but I would say she has proven her capacity to raise massive amounts of money, and she has moved since the time she was in the House to the time she's now in the Senate. She has moved to the ideological left to align herself with the party base that would be influential in choosing who the presidential nominee is. I'm not saying, I don't think comparing any female politician to Hillary is fair, because she's such a giant kind of political figure and has been so for so long. But I would say Gillibrand, if you look at her at sort of her resume, it would suggest that she could, if that void needed to be filled, she could be the female candidate who would fill it.
It's a fascinating book, The Gospel According to the Fix, An Insider's Guide to a Less Than Holy World of Politics. It's published by Broadway. Chris Scalise, I thank you very much for being with us and wish all the luck in the world with the volume.
Oh, please. Thanks so much. I appreciate
it. Great pleasure. Thank you.